It's really being able to think realistically about where you can start and then how you can optimize. And, you know, that's all of the guidance we get out of DOJ too and SEC. It's like, have your program set up and then always be working to continually improve it and see
how
you're performing. And that's totally part of it. It's like, what is something that is achievable that we can operationalize and get out there instead of having this perfect program that sits on a shelf and doesn't actually mitigate my risks?
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Okay, welcome everybody. Mike Volkoff here for another episode of Corruption, Crime, and Compliance. And we're really excited to have Bryn Sedlacek from Aravo. She's the Vice President and Product Manager. Bryn, thank you so much for taking time to visit with us today so we can, you know, have a good discussion on third-party risk management. But thank you for joining us.
Yeah, super excited to be here. I'm a longtime listener, excited to be here.
Thanks, Bryn. Bryn, if you don't mind, I'm going to give a little bit of your background because you're the Vice President of Product Management at Aravo, and you have responsibility for Aravo's platform and application offerings. You joined Aravo in 2017, and you worked in professional services and business development before moving to R&D. One of the things Bryn shares and I share with her is she's passionate about ethics and compliance and driving positive outcomes for Aravo's customers and deeply understanding what your clients and users value. And you have over 15 years of experience in international relations and risk management. Well, congratulations on all of that. You know, Bryn and I met a while ago. We have a colleague who I worked with before by the name of Lauren Johnson. And one of the things he told me about Bryn and the company that he's very excited about is that Aravo has a platform and a technology that is, you have a lot of large enterprise clients. And if you just give us a little bit of background on that, because I think there are some real significant challenges, obviously, when you're dealing with large companies around the globe and managing, I would think, hundreds of thousands, if not more, of third-party relationships. But just sort of a little background on the platform and, you know, your client base and sort of user base.
Absolutely. So Aravo's been around for about 24 years. So we've been around for a while. We started in supplier information management and then moved to third-party risk management over a decade ago. And we really grew up solving some of the hardest, most complex compliance programs for big companies, because that's kind of the client base that we started with. And so that had a number of components that from the very beginning, we were focused on a number of different risk domains for these customers. And so we never started in just one specialization. We were looking at responsible sourcing, anti-bribery, anti-corruption, information security, kind of for the past 15 plus years, because these giant companies were managing risk at that time across all of these different domains. So that was one piece, is making sure that we could support a host of different risk domains, not just one. The other thing that we had to deal with from the beginning, and Michael, you kind of touched on this, is scale. A lot of the companies that we were working with have 500,000 plus third parties, over a million third parties that they needed to manage somewhere. We've got hundreds of thousands of workflows happening monthly, you know, millions of emails going out. And so managing scale has always been like core to the value add that Aravo brings to some of these big companies. And then two other things that kind of came out of growing up serving these really big companies is that we really had to have a system that was flexible enough to meet the business where it was and how it was situated. And so we came up with this fully configurable platform where we can build our data model to match your business. And so we found that that was much more successful with adoption, with companies that had worked with law firms, worked with the Big Four, to come up with a best-in-class global compliance program. And we wanted to make sure that we could meet those needs and build that program. So that really meant that we had to have that configurable platform. And then the other component that was really big for these companies, especially starting in like the 2010s, was auditability and the ability to continuously monitor and improve your program. And so auditability has always been very central to what we do, making sure that that information is captured, is exportable, and then being able to have a holistic view of how your program is operating so that you can continuously understand where you can improve, audit your program. And so those were kind of the areas where we grew up serving these big companies and had to deal with those sorts of things. Also, internationalization. So being able to support, I think we've got over 40 languages supported in the system so that you're working with third parties in their language, but you need that then presented back to you, maybe in English or in a different language. And so really starting out with that big company mindset gave us this host of functionalities in this configurable platform that we can now use and create best practices for maybe smaller companies or companies with less mature programs.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ideas there that I still want to follow up on. I mean, you've laid it out there. Let's start first. I mean, what you mentioned about starting off with your risk domain covering a lot of areas, and you're saying, you know, as many as 15 years ago. Well, let's just touch on one area where we've seen a rapid growth in third-party risk management. And when we talk about holistic risks, what's the number one risk that everybody's talking about is cybersecurity and data privacy. So what's interesting about that is I would say that from my perspective, that's been a phenomenon maybe in the last 5 years where IT has started to get a seat at the table with regard to third parties. Now, you would have thunk, and I hate to use that good English expression, but you would have thunk that, you know, after Target in 2012 and you had the third-party data breach, that everybody would have been making that move. But it took a little bit longer for people to do that. And now we're seeing a rapid sort of bringing together compliance and the IT and the cybersecurity people because it's a natural partnership. And every sort of compliance surveys or studies are confirming that there's greater crossover right now between IT, cyber, and compliance. And what's interesting to me is because of the scale of your services you were offering, you're saying even years before that trend, you guys were building a platform that built in, you know, the IT part, the InfoSec, the whole part that needed to be put in there. So when you read these headlines now about compliance being close with IT, you guys were there years ago, right, Bren? And to me, it's a natural partnership. What do you see going on in that area? And do you think this partnership is going to get stronger? Where do you see that going?
Yeah, absolutely. And it has been really interesting seeing this evolution. You know, it kind of started with anti-bribery to corruption and the FCPA enforcement, you know, in the early 2010s being a main driver, moving to GDPR in 2017, 2018, getting ready for that. And like you said, a big shift more into integrating the IT folks and their risks and domains into that holistic, unified visibility of the risk across the company. So I think that's what we have seen with really successful programs is that they see IT as a partner and want to figure out how to bring those groups and what they are concerned with into the fold, into compliance. And we see this in a number of different ways from how organizations are structured, who owns risk, where that lives, how they work with IT. And that's one of the things that we think about when we build out programs is understanding that you need to meet the unique needs of an information security, a data privacy group, and kind of what they value, but then also being able to meet the needs of an ABAC, a responsible sourcing, and ESG group. And so how we meet that is that you can actually have different risk models per risk domain. And so maybe for IT folks, they're much more conservative in their risk footing. Anything above a 2 out of 10 is going to be high. And that's what they need. And we need to support that. But for, you know, ABAC, maybe it's 7 out of 10 is high. I think the biggest thing where we have seen people be successful is where you meet IT, like where they are, value their input, and be able to build the program that they need instead of trying to fit them into the mold to fit into a different risk framework.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You know, when you bring InfoSec to the table, how do you get started with them? What do you do to get buy-in from them? What is it that you're going to do to try to help in terms of how do you prioritize working with them in this situation? Because, you know, you could have a target type vendor who, you know, hasn't secured their processing or their computers or whatever, and they may not be encrypted. And that's what happened to Target. So how do you get at that? Yeah. How do you work with them to start with?
Yeah, I think it's understanding what they're doing now. And then this is the thing that we start with really any company coming into Rabo, into their system, is understanding who are your third parties? Do you know who your third parties are? And then also being able to document not just who are your third parties, but what are the products and services that they are providing? So that's that kind of additional level that down to be able to understand and catalog and start there. From there, it's working with them to understand what are the most impactful things that they need to do to be able to scope out who are your most critical third parties, who are the ones that you can scope to make sure that you're focusing on the right ones. The things that we see with IT is a lot of the time they want to look at everybody. And so it's trying to figure out how do we best focus the limited resources that we have, third parties that are providing products and services that overlap with your IT infrastructure or have software application-based nature of the products and services. So a lot of it's just starting with the basics, starting with what do you know about your third parties? What are they doing for you? And then how do you scope out who you start diving into to understand those control frameworks and understand what they're doing to make sure that they're protected? And a lot of that comes into contractual obligations and auditing rates and frameworks that they've got in place so that you can make sure that you feel confident with moving forward with that relationship.
Brent, I wanted to go to another topic right when you started off, and you talked about how your system is configurable. So this is different than, and without, you know, there are a lot of products out there where somebody has a sort of off-the-shelf type of product that you then may adjust here and there with, you know, your own sort of company type operations. What you're describing, though, sounds to me like a much broader process, a much more robust process of crafting and building something to align with your specific client. Can you explain that just a little bit more? Because it's an interesting concept.
Absolutely. And again, this kind of goes to where Rabo grew up. And so being able to meet the needs of these giant companies that maybe there wasn't as much, you know, 80% crossover of the needs across these different companies. And so basically we had companies that manage risk at a bunch of different levels and had their business looked really different. And so we had companies that we needed to support risk management and data collection at a shipping vessel level or a dealership level, as well as a third party level. So being able to map not only the third party structure, but also the business structure, like what are the subsidiaries, the headquarters, what are the sites, where are products and services being provided, and making sure that at each level, we could capture the necessary information, capture the risk so that folks could make decisions. And so what that meant was that we needed a data model from the very base architecture level that could meet the needs of the business. And so that's kind of what we have now is we will have conversations. We've got best practices. We do have kind of out of the box offerings. But for our really big customers, it's a conversation of what is your business? What is your third party ecosystem look like? And where do we need to manage risk and capture information to meet the needs of your business based and inserting our own best practices along the way as well?
Well, that's great. Thank you so much. Let's talk about one of our headline here was holistic risk challenges and unified visibility. You know, I love that term, unified visibility, because, you know, in compliance, what we talk about is, you know, line of sight. And that's the unique thing is the line of sight that we have across the organization. And I think you're getting at something here in terms of unified visibility, in terms of accessibility by anybody in the company. But maybe you can address that and how you apply that in the third-party risk management context.
Absolutely. So what we see, it's really common for companies to have fragmented systems, programs, technologies across the different risk domains. And, you know, kind of speaking back to this Rabo origin story, we really needed to meet all of them across the board. So when we think about unified visibility, there's kind of four dimensions. The first is what you talked about, where it's like giving folks access based on their role so that they can see the information that they need. And so having maybe a dashboard for a basic user, which is very different from an executive user and the types of information they need to see driven by role. So that's one piece. A second dimension is unified visibility across third party. I've talked a little bit about this, but there's some risks that are, you know, applied to a third party in general, but really there are other risks that are really specific to the products and services that they're providing. And so when I look at a third party, I want to have unified visibility across that third party of all the things they do for my business, the risk that each of those activities brings, and the different engagement characteristics around each of those. So it's having unified visibility on that third party, everything they do for me, and then the roll-up of the risk there. Another component of that unified visibility is across one particular risk domain. If I run our ABAC program in a company, I want to be able to go in and say, across my entire third-party ecosystem, this is what my risk footing looks like today. Is it going up? Is it going down? Where are my highest risks so that I can concentrate my limited resources in those areas? So it's that unified visibility within a risk domain across your entire supply chain. And then kind of the final one is at that third-party risk management program level, maybe as a board member, as an executive, as you know, somebody who owns the full responsibility for the risk of the company, I need to be able to see across all of my different risk domains, from information security to a data privacy footing, ESG, to even the performance of the third parties that I have in my ecosystem. How can I look at those holistically to understand how I make decisions? And we find that when companies do that, they can find a lot of collaboration and efficiencies, because if I know that this one third party is maybe low risk in one domain, but high risk in another domain, or high risk in multiple domains, maybe I make different decisions. Maybe I put different components in my contract to be able to leverage those mitigation techniques across a host of different risk domains instead of having them be siloed. So it's kind of multiple different layers, but when we see companies do this in a holistic, comprehensive way, we see a lot of efficiencies. We see a lot of greater visibility into how they can make decisions, and a greater visibility just into their supply chain and third-party ecosystem in general.
Yeah, but we'll save supply chain for a second. It actually blends into this issue, which is one of the things that I've been talking a lot about, and I still see people sort of behind the curve. And it's funny you mentioned ABAC, and people are, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done in ABAC, but I still feel like there's a lot of good stuff going on in the ABAC risk management area. The other area, however, that I think is really in need of attention is sanctions. And the reason I say that is because we have the Justice Department, who has just, and people know my reputation, I'm not a fear monger. What I'm trying to say is, when the government tells you we're putting 25 new prosecutors to pursue corporations on sanctions enforcement, you know that they're going to be delivering, and that these 25 individuals are going to produce, and that's what they're there for. So the question to me is, the Justice Department has prioritized criminal enforcement in this area, and we're trying to get, you know, people are elevating their sanctions and export controls programs, but what are some of the challenges that you're seeing in that area? And we'll talk about supply chain in a minute. That's one half of the equation. But we also have on the distribution side and going to customers, in who we're dealing with from a customer standpoint, or going through third parties who divert products into prohibited countries. So tell me what you're seeing and how people are addressing the sanctions issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that, you know, we're kind of seeing something similar to what you're saying, where it's like there's a lagging on the urgency to kind of get this component into those programs. And so one of the things that we do is we do kind of comprehensive screening against sanctions lists, all that sort of stuff. And we can do that at different levels in our data model. And so one of the things, you know, a lot based on a lot of the podcasts you've had recently that I'm thinking about as a product person, is how do we insert this into our products, because it is going to be much more of a focus area for enforcement. And so it's capturing location information, not just at the headquarter level or the product or service site level, but it's really on like understanding the country of origin, country of ultimate use, ultimate destination, screening those, being able to create conditional risk escalations dependent on kind of where things are going, where things are coming from. And then I think the other component too is trying to proactively understand how we can identify higher risk areas where maybe we need some additional area of escalation or review in a particular relationship.
Yeah, that's great. And I wholeheartedly agree with everything you just said. To be honest with you, from my perspective, sanctions enforcement is just, or sanctions compliance is just nowhere near the level of complexity that I've seen with regard to ABAC. And I think ABAC is a much tougher thing to grow and build an effective program. Sanctions, I think, can be done with less time, less intensity. Geography, products, and all of that are very, very important, plus good practices on beneficial ownership and risk prioritization. Well, let me bring up one other topic. You know, and this cuts across all of this, and I saved it sort of a little bit more for last, and that is the auditing and monitoring capability. And I get you on the auditability. I think that's really what I'm seeing more and more concern about from regulators, from the Justice Department, is what are you doing on a real-time basis to monitor and then follow up on? There's sort of this due diligence is not just one and done. You know, you just screen it and say, that's good and see you later. That there's got to be more to it than that. And I see some really interesting strategies being developed in the auditing and monitoring area. And I'd love to get your perspective on sort of what you're seeing out there in the marketplace.
So I think that's a huge topic right now, one that we think about a lot. We work with a lot of other data providers. There's so many different data providers out there. So one of the things that we do is work with them to bring that data into Aravo so that you can see this comprehensive understanding. A lot of companies that we work with already have relationships with them. But exactly to your point, it's how often are you going out and getting that information? How often are you checking against PEP lists? How often are you checking against negative news, all that sort of stuff? And so one of the things that we do is always recommend a risk-based approach. If you screen everything all the time, you are buried under activities because you
absolutely
and start looking. You have to mitigate. You have to decide, is this relevant? Is it not? Make a decision. It's hugely time consuming. And so you have to set up a risk-based approach to how often you're going to monitor based on how critical those third parties are, how high risk they are. Maybe it's in a specific region. And then the other component is that we always make sure we talk to customers about is making sure that you are appropriately staffed to manage the content coming in to be able to make those decisions, escalate as needed, make quicker decisions. This is another area where I think AI is going to be really impactful on being able to more effectively screen out false positives to be able to focus on true hits that I really need to look at as a human, make a decision, and then move forward. So one of the things we work with customers on is understanding their risk footing. What are the most important data feeds that they want to be checking on? And then being able to understand how often is that data updated? So if something's only updated once a month through a different data provider, or, you know, a list gets updated once a month, there's no point in checking it every single day. And so it's optimizing based on risk, resources, and then also kind of the cadence with which that data gets updated to make it as real time as possible. We have some customers that really want to just have daily screenings across all of their third parties on all of these different risk domains, but they have an army of people to basically look at all of that. Other companies are a little bit more risk focused and they've got it. All of their third parties are on an annual basis, and then they have their really high risk ones on maybe a weekly basis. So there's a lot of in between, but totally to your point, it is a best practice to have some sort of continuous monitoring. It is not a one and done. You need to understand what is happening constantly out there with your third party ecosystem, so that you can react and be proactive instead of finding out through the news or something like that.
And the thing about that is I've seen too many situations where people come to us and they go, look, we're getting buried in these notices. Can you help us to work through them? And to me, that's an indication that the work that you just talked about hasn't been done in terms of who are the people that you're most worried about? How often do you want to update them? There are some that, you know, they just go through the system and they're so low risk that we don't check them every day. We don't check them, whatever. That can be done on a much more irregular basis, you know, longer time period. So I think there's a responsibility in whatever tool you're using is to think about how you're going to do this from a risk standpoint, knowing what your resources are. Now, on the other hand, look, they ask us to help and we get to, you know, charge money for it. No, I'm kidding. What I'm saying is we don't want to do that. What we really want is it to be right, because we want our clients to have an automated service that works in the best way possible. And the other point I would just mention, and people have heard me repeat this over and over, but if you don't have an automated program to start with, you're in trouble. Even if it's the off-the-shelf kind, at least have something in place. what we're talking about here in terms of the model that Aravo sets up is, I think in the long run, by risk tailoring it and setting up everything that you've talked about this whole conversation about how everything is really tailored to your specific risks, your business operations, your resources for reviewing and monitoring. To me, it may be something that is worth the time up front to design something that in the end is going to be more efficient and more productive for you and your staff. And I'll bet you your need for staffing will go down if you design this thing right. Is that what you see with your clients too?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. It's really being able to think realistically about where you can start and then how you can optimize. And, you know, that's all of the guidance we get out of DOJ too and SEC. It's like, have your program set up and then always be working to continually improve it and see
how
you're performing. And that's totally part of it. It's like, what is something that is achievable that we can operationalize and get out there instead of having this perfect program that sits on a shelf and doesn't actually mitigate my risks? How do I put together something? And then this is another area where, you know, we've had AI capabilities for the last 4+ years. And so our customers can look at all of the decisions that their risk managers and procurement folks have made over the past 4 years. And I proactively identify, here are opportunities for automation. Here are further opportunities for process optimization. And so one of the exercises that we'll do with some of our clients is look at, here's the first version of this compliance workflow that you put out. Here's version 5, and you've actually taken your time to onboarding from 30 days to 5 days, and you've got greater risk coverage across all of these different
things. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You said my point more eloquently, okay? You said it. I'm going to use that. That was excellent. Anyways, Rin, thank you so much. This has been a great conversation. If any of our listeners want to reach you, and I'd urge everybody to do so because Rin is just an incredible resource and the product itself, I think, can be a great solution for the right company. As a matter of fact, during the interview, I've only thought of two people I know I have to introduce you to because I want them to use this. Anyways, but tell people, how can they best reach you?
I would love to hear from folks. I love talking this stuff. I, you know, come from a compliance background. As a product person, I love to hear what folks are interested in. So I'm on LinkedIn. My name's a little bit tricky, but it's Bryn and then Sedlacek, Bryn Sedlacek. And then my email address is bsedlacek@aravo.com, A-R-A-V-O. But would love to hear from folks and so glad to be able to talk to you today, Michael.
All right. Thank you, Bryn. Okay. We'll be back in touch probably on other topics down the road, but thank you again and appreciate your time and all your insights. Thanks again.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkov, go to volkovlaw.com.